This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. Great to have you with us for the Tuesday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Rachel Pearson.
The Noon Business Hour, presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Travel Tuesday. The Greek Islands is all of a sudden a hot spot. A lot of people heading there from the U.S. Mayor Lightfoot's cast some doubt on a run for a second term during an interview with the New York Times. We'll cover that in our next segment with Greg Hines of Crane's Chicago Business. Right now, a big day of economic data led by the latest report on home prices. Let's get some analysis from Greg McBride, chief financial analyst at Bankrate.com, based in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida. Greg, kind of give us the nuts and bolts here. What are we seeing in the latest home price numbers?
Home prices through the roof. S&P Case-Shiller up 17% year over year, and the FHFA came out with their price index up 18% year over year. Both of those just, I think, a reflection of the fact that there's very limited inventory. There's a lot of strong bidding going on, and buyers have that tailwind of low mortgage rates. So a lot more demand than there is supply continuing to push those home prices up.
Help us to understand, is there any kind of an impact, positive or negative, on the wider economy when you see home prices rising like this so far so fast?
Well, I think the concern becomes sustainability. Does it go too far too fast? Generally, the rise in prices means homeowners are sitting on a lot more equity. You're starting to see people tap into some of that equity to do things like home improvements. So there is a positive boost to the economy from that, as long as those prices don't go too far too fast and then have to correct later.
Well, Greg, not maybe as noticeable of a growth here, but durable goods, they've seen some steady progress, 13 of the last 14 months. Can we attribute any of that success to the housing prices?
Well, Rachel, durable goods, like you said, has continued to be strong. Businesses continue to spend. That's consistent with ongoing economic growth. I think the main thing is, we're going to continue to see economic growth, and we're going to continue to see business spending. I think both of those downshifting to a slightly lower gear. I don't know how much of that's connected to what we're seeing in housing, but I think the underlying factor for both of those is cheap borrowing. That does facilitate both business spending as well as consumers buying houses.
Well, and what are we seeing in some of those consumer confidence numbers?
Yeah, I mean, the highest level since February of 2020, which might seem like 100 years ago, but pre-pandemic, we saw June numbers were also revised higher. So, got the labor market viewed very positively. People see that jobs are very plentiful. And, the significance here is consumer spending accounts for almost 70% of economic output. So as goes the consumer, so goes the U.S. economy.
Always appreciate good analysis from Greg McBride, chief financial analyst at Bankrate.com. Just ahead, we'll talk with Greg Hines of Crane's Chicago Business, contemplating the likelihood of a Mayor Lightfoot re-election run. Mayor Lightfoot has told the New York Times a re-election bid is, in her words, not a gimme. Let's find out about that. Get some analysis from Greg Hines, a columnist at Crane's Chicago Business. Greg, at this level, I mean, she's not running again until 2023. Does she have to say this? Does she have to be coy about this early?
Well, politicians seem to always handle this a little bit differently. And to be perfectly honest, none of them ever quite tell the truth, good, bad, or neutral. They always tend to show a little leg and then pull it back or whatever. But in this case, it was striking that the mayor seemed to publicly cast as much doubt on a reelection bid as she did. She could have flipped this off and said, as she told a radio interviewer here in Chicago a couple of weeks ago, that, hey, I haven't made up my mind yet. It's a long time. I'm going to take my time, talk to my wife or whatever. I mean, J.B. Pritzker, the governor, went for many months denying, even though he was piling tons of money into his campaign fund, that he'd made up his mind yet. But in this case, the mayor publicly groused at length to the Times reporter about how tough this environment is and how mean people are and how difficult it is to be a black woman and a lesbian in this environment. And it was striking that she was quite that candid, and it raised some questions about whether the mayor, you know, maybe she's having a bad day. Maybe she was trying to send a message to her supporters to pump them up and, you know, hey, get busy, guys, and help me out here. Or maybe she was just being honest that that she has real problems with the job and its difficulty and might not do it again. Now, later yesterday, when she was questioned about it by local press, she seemed to back off that a little bit. But nonetheless, she said what she said, and it's going to raise some questions, particularly among political fundraisers, that, gee, why do I want to throw money to somebody that maybe isn't running?
When it comes to the state of the city right now, it seems like a difficult job for anyone, right? I mean, it doesn't matter whether she runs and is reelected or someone else is in there. You got financial issues, you got crime issues, you have a city trying to rebound from a pandemic. I mean, it seems like the difficult nature of the job is going to be there regardless of who ends up being in charge.
Oh, I wouldn't want this job now. And God bless Lori Lightfoot for taking it on, because it is incredibly difficult. And while she's hit some bumps, she's had some successes too. She's been very active, for instance, in trying to pull more investment cash into minority neighborhoods that have been cash short, are falling apart forever. I give her credit for that. I thought she did a reasonably good job handling the pandemic so far. On the other hand, the crime problem is clearly has bedeviled her, as it has to some extent previous mayors. We're not the only city right now, Chicago, to be suffering problems with crime in the wake of COVID, but it seems to be particularly raw and out of control here. And you know, all that's led to a lot of quiet tire kicking behind the scenes in the political class about who might run, who's thinking about running, or whatever. But at this point, she's got the job, and nobody's announced against her. And you know, as somebody listening in this city, I wish her good luck.
Well, and Greg, you know, we obviously heard the mayor's interview with the New York Times. She mentioned it's a tough time for mayors across the country. But what's interesting, and maybe what's unique to Chicago, is we've seen a lot of other chief executives within the city call it quits.
She and the Times reporter both referenced the mayor of Atlanta, who decided to run, not to run after one term. The mayor of Seattle did the same thing a little bit earlier. You know, and Lightfoot could have said in the interview that, well, that's them, where Chicago's a different city, but she didn't. She kind of emphasized that, gee, look what's happened elsewhere. Intentional or not, that seemed to send a message that, gee, folks, I'm not sure I'm going to do this again, which was my takeaway from the thing, the mayor has now really raised a question about whether she's going to seek the job again or not.
Always good to get insight from Greg Hines, columnist. You read him at Crane's Chicago Business online and in print.
Money conversation that pays a big dividend. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
With companies looking to hire in a tight market, prospective employees are in position to ask for more, not just when it comes to salary. Joining us on the McGrath-Lexis Business Line, Tessa White, CEO of The Job Doctor, found online at thejobdoctor.com. Tessa, I mean, have we seen anything like this here, where if an employee gets a job offer, they seem to be in the driver's seat in a way that they're not usually?
It's really interesting. I believe we're in the midst of an employee revolution. And it used to be that loyalty was one way company could call the shots. And I believe that now employees are calling the shots and saying, look, I'm not going to work for you unless you pay me fairly, unless you have a career plan for me, and unless you treat me well.
So if you get that offer, you know, okay, we want you to come and work for us. Is it just negotiating over salary, trying to get as much as possible? Are there other things that you can negotiate?
There's actually about 15 things that you can negotiate, and people don't realize that there's all of these different components. But there's a couple that are especially important for people in this environment. One is making sure that they aren't shortchanged and prorated on the new bonus that they get. They leave a bonus, it's a full payout, and they forget they're going to get prorated for the bonus more than likely. And the other is, I'm a big believer in pre-negotiating your severance. In this environment where companies are consolidating and there's a lot of layoffs, I wouldn't take the risk of going to a new company unless I had pre-negotiated a severance. And it's a pretty easy thing to do when you're in the honeymoon period.
Is there a point, if you're an employee and you're making these demands, or not demand, but just trying to really lay out your expectations, does there become a point where maybe you push things too far and now the offer's off the table?
Yeah, you got to be careful. You know, you don't get to just blaze in and call all the shots. This is a partnership. I tell people you should really look at about the top two or three things that are important to you. You know, for some people, it's flexible schedules. For other, it's pay. And there's a whole bunch of other things in between. Find out what they are and then make sure in your counteroffer, give them two different things that would both be accessible to you, two different packages, because then you're putting them in between instead of a yes-no decision. You're putting them in between a yes, yes decision, and it does increase your odds of getting what you ask for.
Thanks so much for all of the details. I'm sure a lot of prospective employees excited about this. That's Tessa White, CEO of The Job Doctor, found online at thejobdoctor.com. Still ahead, Travel Tuesday, exploring a journey to the Greek islands.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Rachel Pearson. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
Government doctors revise mask guidance amid a surge of new COVID cases.
Testimony reveals the terror experienced by police during the riot at the Capitol by Trump supporters.
In Travel Tuesday, as Europe reopens to tourists, we look at the Greek islands as a potential destination.
Also on the travel front, how a credit card could come to your rescue when you're on a trip.
On the markets, quite a tumble here. The Dow down 221, NASDAQ down 2%. That's 321, and the S&P down 46 points.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is set to announce revised mask guidance this afternoon. CBS's Sabrina Cupid has the preview.
According to a federal official that I've talked to, the new recommendations will have to do with masking up in areas where the spread of the virus is high. The report says new data suggests those who are fully vaccinated could have higher virus levels than first believed. Now, the vaccine is still considered very effective in preventing hospitalizations and death. A CDC briefing is set for 3 o'clock this afternoon.
States with low vaccination rates are experiencing a wave of new cases, mainly because of the highly contagious Delta variant.
Graphic details about the January attack on the Capitol by Trump loyalists are being revealed during the first hearing of a House Select Committee.
We're going to be guided solely by the facts.
And here are the facts, says Chairman Benny Thompson.
The whole world saw the reality of what happened on January 6th.
D.C. Police Officer Michael Fanone saw it, experienced it, and is angered by members of Congress who deny it.
I feel like I went to hell and back to protect them and the people in this room. But too many are now telling me that hell doesn't exist or that hell actually wasn't that bad. The indifference shown to my colleagues is disgraceful.
And Fanone says those members of Congress have betrayed their oath of office. Linda Kenyon, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
You can take WBBM anywhere you go by using the Odyssey app, which now has hundreds of new exclusive music stations for music fans by music fans only on the Odyssey app. It's 12:32.
The best daily deal in Chicago, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
The Noon Business Hour, presented by the Village of Bedford Park, a podcast of the Business Hour, always available at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the Odyssey app. Markets in the red, they have been throughout the day. The Dow down 241, the NASDAQ down 323, and the S&P down 48 points. Let's see what's going on. Steve Esposito is here, Executive Director of Morgan Stanley Wealth Management in Lake Forest. Steve, what do you make of what you're seeing on Wall Street today?
Hello, and thanks for having me. Well, you got a sell-off going here because people are a little nervous about the Delta variant, potential mask mandates. A lot going on in China right now, causing that to put some fear in everybody, inflation and supply chain issues. So overall, it's an emotional day. I think people need to just calm down and look at the big picture, and I do think the future is bright. But right now, it's one of those days. We'll see how it ends, but a lot of things for people to think about today.
Important for, you say it's one of those days, important for people to remember, you know, one day does not make a market. One day does not make a portfolio. You're going to have the ups and downs. On the up days, we're really happy. Days like this, people are kind of sweating a little.
Oh, that's to say at least. Yeah. But, you know, I've been doing this almost 4 decades. So I've been through this before, I don't know how many times. And you look at it as more of an opportunity for those people who have some cash to go in and do a little bit of buying where you can find some bargains. Again, you know, the supply chains are holding back numbers. But if you look through all the noise going on today and the algorithmic trading, you got to look at the earnings are robust. They're doing very well. The numbers are simply too low. The analysts have to raise numbers time and time again. They continue to have to raise their numbers going into there. We're making headway in terms of the variant and everything else like that. If you can have faith in that going forward and look at the economy, the reopening of the economy, Europe eventually reopen. All of this bodes very, very well for the future of the economy and economic growth. We're setting records. And I think that's going to play well in the last quarter of this year and in the first half of next year. You'll start seeing some earnings reports and some growth in the economy that we haven't seen in decades. So let's focus on the positives when we get through this as opposed to the negatives. And I think if you stay focused, there's some really good bargains out there. There really is right now.
Steve, let's talk about this tightrope that the Federal Reserve is walking today.
That's another issue. What is the Fed going to say? One breath, they're seeing the economy doing well, but there's talk of more stimulus coming in Washington. So they're not sure where exactly that's going to play. The Fed wants to, you know, worried about inflation, and rightfully so, but some inflation is not so bad. So again, more moving parts make it more along the lines of they're just going to sit tight and do nothing for now until they get more clarity. But generally speaking, when you look at the long Treasury, that yield has to go up at some point. You can't continue to borrow money, sell bonds, and not have the yield go higher. So in a weird way, we are in the economy right now. Low interest rates are considered negative, and high interest rates are considered positive, which is all upside down. Combine that with everything else you're talking about, that's why investors are nervous. It's just nothing's making any sense right now.
Yeah, and yeah, you know, you start raising interest rates. Well, okay, that's good for some, but on the other hand, other people would say, hey, we still have a recovery going on here.
Right, but you know, rates are so low historically. If you look at a 10-year Treasury yield at 1.25%, the after-tax and after-inflation rate of return is actually negative going out 10 years. You'll actually lose money at the end of 10 years in Treasury. So interest rates for bond investors simply aren't high enough. Bonds are, you'd be very careful with bonds, especially long-term bonds as an investor. There's not a lot of places to go with your money to get income, other than maybe dividend-paying stocks. There's fears of taxes going up next year. So investors are confused, but I think interest rates need to go higher at some point, not a lot higher, and they will, and that will signal good news. That the economy is getting better. And again, corporate profits, listen to what CEOs are telling you. Other than supply chain shortages, business is robust. And the supply chain will catch up. And when it catches up, get out of the way. You're going to see massive increases in GDP and earnings, especially in cyclical companies with dividends. That's where you want to be right now. You want to look at that going out 6-12 months.
Given what we're seeing, what's your advice to investors?
Calm down. Review what you're to make sure you stay with earnings. There's a lot of story stocks out there that we all hear about. A lot of investors just buying what's hot and what they can trade. And I would really recommend against that, unless you're a professional, and even it's difficult for them. But if you're looking out, you know, best way, Wayne Gretzky said it best, you go to where the puck is going to be, not where it is. So look out where you think will be 6 months, a year, 2 years from now on the economy. What industries will do the best going forward when the supply chains catch up? If you look at the energy sector, you got $70 oil. If you look at the travel industry, that will come back. There's big demand there. The automobile industry, the financials, the banks are raising their dividends. They're buying back stock. They're saying the consumer is robust. Business is good. They're not lying to you. They're telling you the truth. And their valuations of many of the companies in those industries are really cheap on all historic measures, and especially since the earnings expectations are probably too low going, and the valuations versus earnings are really low. So that's where I'm concentrating. And I get a dividend, I'll get a dividend too. So I'm very bullish. I'm not worried. The near-term stuff just gives me a headache.
Always appreciate the insight. Steve Esposito, Executive Director of Morgan Stanley Wealth Management based in Lake Forest. Up next in Travel Tuesday, planning a trip to paradise in the Greek islands.
loaning useful information each weekday. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's a double dose of Travel Tuesday on the Noon Business Hour. Coming up in just a few minutes, picking the right travel credit card to get the best perks. Right now, exploring the possibility of a journey to the islands of Greece. Joining us on the McGrath Lexus Business Line, Angie Rice, co-founder of Boutique Travel Advisors, the website travelbta.com. Angie, what is it about the Greek islands that have them so hot these days?
Well, first and foremost, the Greeks are very welcoming to tourists right now. And I think it's important to recognize in a pandemic type situation, it's really important to go where people are welcoming you. And also, it's a fantastic time as far as weather-wise to be in Greece.
When it comes to the safety issue, that's what Americans obviously are concerned about. They want to go to Europe. They want to be safe. What's the vaccination situation in Greece right now?
Quite high, maybe higher than people might think. But again, similarly, like in the U.S., there are people who are just adverse to getting vaccinated. So that is playing a part in terms of the percentages. And like you said, as far as being safe, I think the Greek islands is a place where you're more likely to be social distanced from the standpoint you're going to be on catamarans, boats, outdoors versus, you know, a trip to Paris or London where you're more likely to be in the pubs and at the museums where it's more indoors. So open air places like Greece, Croatia, and the Caribbean offers more opportunity for social distancing.
Well, and it's some of those other secluded places. Sure, you know, Americans could fly there, but I got to think that there might be some cost efficiency, maybe making our wallets a little happier, that makes the Greek islands just so welcoming.
Yes, I would say Greece as well as Croatia. I mean, they're both next door to each other, so to speak. I was just cruising Celebrity Apex, where we ported out of Athens and returned via Athens, but we were able to stop at many of the Greek islands, Mykonos, Santorini, Rhodes, as well as we made a stop to Dubrovnik, which if you've not explored Croatia and you're not sure between Greece and Croatia, I highly recommend considering both islands.
And I'm trying to think, as you're making a plan here, you want to go with a tour and a tour company? Do you want to venture off on your own, or does that just depend on your own personality?
Definitely depends on your personality. For example, cruising versus a land itinerary is very different. Private charters is also something that I would highly recommend. You can take a catamaran for a weekly charter around the islands, and it's so private and exclusive and allows you to really kind of take your time. You have more time at the ports because you're docking overnight, so you don't have to get back on a ship as early. And I'd also, you know, recommend that you look into private touring, especially now more than ever. You know, we had an amazing private tour of the Acropolis and of the museum while we were in Athens, and it really allowed for a great recap of Greek mythology to history, as well as, you know, more modern day times. And I was traveling with my niece, and she learned a lot as well, such as the fact that, you know, Athens is really the place where democracy was founded. And I think it's great to be reminded of that and to share that experience, especially with families and young children.
Thanks so much, Angie Rice, co-founder of Boutique Travel Advisors. Their website, again, travelbta.com. Join us at this time tomorrow for Personal Finance Wednesday, and still to come, picking the best credit card for when you travel.
Discussing the news affecting your money. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Part two of Travel Tuesday. We're examining the best credit cards for travelers and how the right one could be a huge help. We're joined by Ted Rossman, industry analyst at creditcards.com. Ted, let's begin. One way that if you have the right travel credit card, it could help you out if you're in a jam.
I really like the trip interruption or trip cancellation insurance that comes on some cards, like the Chase Sapphire Reserve and the Chase Sapphire Preferred. This is really great if you have to cancel because of illness or severe weather or, you know, just to clarify, this isn't because you changed your mind and you're not comfortable going on the trip anymore. This is if something actually goes wrong. But in that event, it can really help you out if you're stranded or if you need to cancel.
Yeah, being clear, when it comes to you just changing your mind, there's not much you can do. At the very least, there's going to be some sort of a fee.
Yes, the airlines have made their cancellation policies a lot more generous. So you may be able to reschedule without any fee and get a voucher, but that's not really a travel insurance thing. But there are some great credit card perks. You know, besides the one we just mentioned, you can also get rental car insurance. You can get coverage if your baggage is lost or delayed. And this all comes included on many credit cards.
So you say if the luggage is lost or delayed, I mean, what do they do? Do they give you money? Do some sort of compensation? Do they call and actually connect with the airline and go, hey, what's up with this luggage? I mean, what do they do?
Basically, the way it works is they can reimburse you for eligible expenses. So if the luggage is actually lost, you can hopefully get reimbursed for the contents of all of your belongings. But what's really helpful, too, even if it's just delayed, some cards like, you know, those Chase cards I mentioned, or also a couple of United cards are good at this, the United Explorer card, United Quest card, they'll actually give you like $100 a day for eligible expenses. So you could buy toiletries, you could buy clothes, you could buy a cell phone charger. It just tides you over until you get reunited with your stuff.
You sort of touched on some travel cards that provide rental car insurance. That's something I can get when I get a rental car. So how is this different?
This will let you save money. The best coverage to look for is primary car rental insurance. And again, those Chase Sapphire cards really stand out here. That means that you can be covered for any sort of collision damage without having to go through your own personal insurance company. A lot of credit card rental car insurance is secondary, which could still be useful, but you have to go through your own insurer. They might raise your rates. The primary rental car coverage, when it comes with a credit card, could save you maybe $20 or $30 a day.
Thanks for the advice. That's Ted Rossman, industry analyst at creditcards.com. If you missed any part of today's show, you can catch our stream and just skip back to the time you want. There's also a pause and rewind function that works both online and with the Odyssey app.